Welcome to the Dearly Woven podcast. I'm your host, Casey Dow. This is the podcast all about making with fiber and the sheep who grow the wool we love to create with. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 22. This week, my guest is Michelle Stevens. She raises Southdown and Oxford sheep at Sweet Pea Farm in upstate New York. During the interview, Michelle shares how a funny joke is what got them started with raising sheep. She shares about her YouTube channel and some great advice for new shepherds or for those who are looking to add more sheep to their flock. Before we jump into the interview, if you are enjoying the podcast and would like to help support it, you can share it with your friends, and you can also leave a rating or review, which helps others to find the podcast. And there are still some Heritage Sheep Journey logo shirts and totes available on my website, dearlywoven.com. And again, 10% of the shirt sales is being donated to the Livestock Conservancy. All right, now let's jump into the interview with Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
Would you like to introduce and share a little bit about yourself and the breeds of sheep that you raise on your farm?
Sure. So my name is Michelle Stevens. I run Sweet Pea Farm NY, which is a small diversified livestock farm in upstate New York. We raise predominantly Southdown sheep. We also have a couple Oxford sheep. Both of those are breeds that come from the UK. And we love working with those breeds because they're great for growing meat, especially. They grow really quickly out on pasture. But I am an avid fiber artist. I love to spin and needle felt. So I found that their wool, you know, works well for those projects as well. We also raise boar goats and Cooney Coon pigs, and we have a big collection of poultry from little tiny chickens to big peacocks. Our kids are very active in 4-H and FFA, and so they kind of have accumulated some of the other animals to participate in different projects with those organizations. So it's kind of a big menagerie over here, but the sheep are definitely the predominant animal on the farm. We have 45 sheep, and that number grows. We keep all of our ewe lambs every year. We market our wool and meat products at the local farmers markets and craft fairs. And then we also have an Etsy store and a website that people can find, you know, our wool products on as well.
Now, did you have a livestock or farming background before getting your sheep?
Not at all. I grew up in the closest city. It's a very small city, but, you know, very much a neighborhood setting. My husband is retired military, but he grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. So neither one of us had any agricultural backgrounds. I had a great uncle that I was very close with growing up, and he owned like the family homestead that, you know, our like great-great-grandparents immigrated from, you know, Europe to. And my fondest memories were growing up being out there in the country. So when my husband retired from the military, we built our property out on 17 acres in upstate New York. And that's really not a lot of land once you get into livestock. But we built our house on a road called Lamb Road. And as a funny joke, my husband was like, we should really get some sheep to mow the lawn. And so our little garden and chicken homestead turned into a sheep farm very quickly.
Was there a certain reason that you went with the Southdown breed and the Oxfords, you said?
So we started out with Baby Doll Southdowns, which are the heritage, like old school variety of the Southdowns. Because they're very cute. I got on this website called Sheep 101 and just started looking at different breeds of sheep and fell in love with the baby dolls. And I really enjoyed them for the first couple of years of owning the farm, but the girls really enjoyed showing sheep. My life before the farm, I showed dogs professionally. So we had spent a lot of time traveling and going to shows and things like that. And so the natural progression was to, you know, of course, now show the sheep, because why not? So we began showing the baby dolls, which was fun. But as my oldest daughter is 17, and as she got older, the baby dolls are not very competitive in the show ring. And they're very difficult to show because they're so short. So you have to like walk bending over with the sheep. So we transitioned to the American Southdowns. Their temperaments are extremely calm. The baby dolls are mostly calm as well, but the South Downs are just particularly calm and easy for the kids to work with. And they were much more competitive as far as like the 4-H and FFA world go. So we really just wanted a breed of sheep that was good with the kids. And the South Downs are 100% that. I have a 3-year-old now, but she's handled, last year she took a lamb to state fair to show in like the peewee division when she was 2. And, you know, they're just very calm and easygoing. So we wanted that. We wanted the kids to have an animal that they were comfortable with and we were comfortable with them handling.
And do they help you with all the chores too?
Oh yeah. The girls are out there. I've got 2 kids outside right now clipping sheep for what is going to be a virtual county fair this weekend. We don't have any actual fair. We have some actual sheep shows they can go to later on in the year, but this year, the county fair is going to be done virtually, so they still have to get the sheep all ready and everything for the videos that they enter. So the kids are outside doing that right now, and they're very hands-on, very involved. And that's how we ended up with the Oxfords, is that I have 3 daughters. So, of course, the oldest daughter wanted to differentiate herself.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, like competing against each other all the time can get difficult. So she wanted to get a different breed of sheep and challenge herself a little. So when we show the South Downs, they're what we call slick shorn. So we shave them right down. When you show the Oxfords, they're fitted. So you have to like keep the wool on them, but groom it very neatly. And it's much harder to do. So that's how we ended up with the Oxfords. She wanted a challenge and we did some research, and Oxfords are another very calm breed. They're kind of dopey. Like they're like the Labradors of the sheep world. They're just very like, you know, goofy and easygoing. They're extremely curious sheep. Like, I know that if somebody's chewing on my pocket, it's usually an Oxford, you know. It's just, so that's how we ended up with the second breed, is that my oldest daughter wanted to have more of a challenge and a different breed to show in. So, and they grow some beautiful fiber. The South Down fiber doesn't grow very well for spinning. It just doesn't grow the staple length that some other breeds of sheep do. It's extremely crimpy, which makes it great for the felting that I do. But the Oxfords grow a beautiful long fleece. So if I'm going to spin a fleece, it's usually an Oxford fleece over the South Downs, just because it has that much longer staple length.
Well, I've felt and I've worked with baby doll South Down wools. Now, what is the Oxfords wool like?
The Oxfords is a much more, it still has that downy texture to it, but it's a little bit silkier, not nearly as crimpy as the South Downs. So, you know, it just makes a really soft fiber, you know, a really soft yarn to spin. And I can still felt with it, but I really got into needle felting because when I had the sheep, there wasn't anyone to shear them. So we sheared the sheep ourselves, not a big deal. But then we had the wool and I was like, well, I don't want to use it for insulation. You know what I mean? So I, you know, at the time I was a new spinner, and it's difficult to spin a short staple length when you're starting out. So I did some research on what it was good for and found felting. And of course now that's like a full-time job for me. So I really got into the needle felting, and it's all because of those baby dolls. I didn't want to throw that wool away. So.
Yes. I've been binge watching your YouTube channel because it's so great. And it's so nice to find a more sheep focused channel, because there's so many homestead YouTube channels out there, but not so many to have to do with sheep. So I'm really enjoying yours. And I actually just watched your felted soap video last night. So I told my 2 oldest kids that after lunch today, we would make some, that I have some leftover wool. So I told them we would make some. And so they're super excited about it.
Oh, cool. It's so fun. And I think, like, I run a 4-H club now myself. And I think a lot of these things that we see people do, we're like, oh, that's so hard. Like, how do you do it? But then, you know, when you get down into it, it's really simple and so easy. And the kids really enjoy, you know, working with the wool and making something productive out of it. It's just such a blast. So I'm excited. I hope they have fun with it.
Oh yeah. They're so excited about it. I saw too a great video you posted on your channel that is comparing 2 brands of portable electro net fencing that you use with your sheep and your goats. So would you like to share what your setup is like when it comes to how you have your pastures and fencing laid out for your livestock?
Sure. So when we built the farm initially, like I said, my husband and I had no idea what we were doing. So we had built some fence out of like welded wire rolls of fence that you get at like Tractor Supply or any farm supply stores. And that works fine. But the problem with that is that you're limited to the space that you fenced in to put the sheep on. Well, the biggest hardship with raising small ruminant sheep and goats, for myself at least, is parasite issues. So we found out very quickly that putting the sheep in the same pastures, you know, for a longer period of time doesn't do them any favors when it comes to the parasites. So we still use the welded wire fence as perimeter fencing, but now our entire property is grazed. Like, we don't mow very many lawns in our house. We use the electronets and move the sheep around every day, sometimes twice a day, depending on how much they're eating. And they will graze that one area down. And then the next day they move to new grass. So they're going to be on a new spot every day. And they won't go back to the spot that they were on for several weeks, the way we have it set up. Mm-hmm. So that way they're not revisiting any areas that they might have shed parasite on or anything like that. So we have just began using those electronet fences this year. It seems to a lot of people like they're a big investment, but anybody who's built fencing knows that any fencing is a big investment. And the bonus with these nets is that we can literally make anything a pasture. We can graze the most obsolete corner of the farm and the sheep get a day's worth of feed out of it, and we don't have to mow it. So it's really like a win-win all around. And the sheep are extremely respectful of fences. The goats are not. So you have to make sure that everything is electrified when the goats are on it. But the sheep, I mean, I wouldn't do this just because I don't want my sheep, you know, getting out, but I could put the sheep out on the electronets and not electrify it. And I'm pretty sure they would not push the fence. You know what I mean? They would stay within the fencing because they see a fence and they're like, oh, I'm not supposed to go past that. The goats are like, oh, that looks like something fun to climb on. So right. It's a totally different ball game, but we're really enjoying using the net.
Now, have you had any trouble with like maybe lambs trying to get through it and get caught in it, or are they pretty good about it too?
No, they've been pretty good. The lambs are very intuitive. Like, they stay right with their moms, and I feel like their moms communicate all, you know, they learn everything from their moms. So we haven't had any issues yet. Most of our lambs are now several months old. We start lambing in January, and then we lamb another set in the fall. So right now we're kind of in between babies. So a lot of times we don't have anything super little out on pasture. You know what I mean? Because in the fall or in January, there's not much forage. They're eating hay at that point. So the lambs are quite a bit bigger by the time they actually go out on the nets, and they still are pretty, you know, respectful. We haven't had any issues.
So do the South Downs, do they come in season twice a year then?
Some of them do. Some of them do not. So we have some genetically that, like, we have found, whether intentional or not, they would prefer to be bred this time of year for fall lambs. And then there are some ewes that absolutely will not breed for fall lambs, and they'll get bred in August for January lambs. So it just depends. They're not typically out of season breeders, the South Down breed, but we have found that there are certainly some maternal lines that all of those sheep and their daughters will get bred in for fall lambs. So we use that as an opportunity to split up the groups a little bit so that we don't have, you know, the whole group lambing out in January, February timeframe.
Right. It's nice to, yeah, break that up a little bit.
Right. And we've switched things around quite a bit this year with all the changes in the world. Normally we travel to see my husband's family like in the fall. Well, this year we're not going to be doing any traveling. So we have, you know, we have a group of lambs coming in the fall. Then we've bred some boar goats, which are out of season breeders. They'll breed pretty much year round. And we have our first litters of Cooney Coon piglets coming this fall. So it'll be a heftier fall than it is a winter, which is not normal for us, but
be lots of little babies running around.
Right.
So with their wool, do you process it all yourself, or do you send any of it to the mill? Because I don't know, do mills usually take South Down wool? Do you know?
They will if it's over 3 inches in staple length, some of them. I do all of my processing in-house just because I'm not a very patient person. So it's very much easy for me to just, you know, go through a fleece and wash it and cart it and have it ready to go and kind of, you know, be on my own pace. The mills are kind of few and far between, especially the ones that'll take the shorter length fleeces. So the wait time can be 4 to 6 months to get some fleeces back, right, just because they're very busy, which is wonderful. But, you know, sometimes I have, you know, a lot of craft shows I'm doing and I need to have a lot of dryer balls and needle felted items made. I can't wait for a mill to get the stuff back to me. So, So I just do it myself. And there's also some things I started making the dryer balls, which is a pretty common, you know, wool product. A lot of people know about them because my second daughter had very sensitive skin. And we found that even the products that we use to make the dryer balls, we have to be careful with. So like we felt the wool with a goat's milk soap, even because any kind of soap that touches anything she's wearing can affect her skin. Like she's just that kind of kid. So, you know, we're very careful about how we wash the fleeces, and some of the mills use certain things to process the fiber. And I just want to be kind of in control of what's touching the fiber so that I can assure people there's nothing less than gentle that could be in that dryer ball, if that makes sense. So
yeah, definitely. So do you, you said you went to farmers markets, and so is all the things you make felted, or do you take some spun yarn too? And what's the like feedback you've gotten from doing those?
Well, I have a pretty big advantage with the felted stuff because it's not common around where I live. So I can get into a lot of like really big craft shows and things because it's not, you know, there's not like three other vendors selling it. Mm-hmm. So my biggest sellers are the felted critters and the wool dryer balls. I have had people recently, in fact, the last couple of weeks at farmers market, ask for yarn, but I usually send my yarn to my sister because she's a beautiful knitter. And I, you know, just like to spin for the change of pace, you know, it's something you don't have to really think about. So I just have sent her the yarn, but I have never sold spun yarn because, you know, I just didn't know what the market was like. And it was just kind of a smaller hobby. So I've never had, you know, any experience with that, but people have started to ask. So maybe in the future, I don't know if I can find some more hours in the day.
Right. Something. Yeah. Trying to find that free time might be a little challenging.
Right.
I'm curious, what originally made you want to start a YouTube channel?
Well, the YouTube channel started many years ago. I think like 8 years ago, we originally started it just because I wanted to have the memories to look back on. Like you didn't know if Facebook would last very long. So, you know, I just wanted to have something like a record of the farm and the kids growing up on the farm and posting videos. And then, you know, time went on and my kids started having other YouTube channels they liked watching, and they would be like, Mom, can I, you know, Chloe, my second child particularly likes to do videos with me and on crafts and things that she's doing. And it kind of just grew from there. People would ask questions. We have a lot of people that buy our animals for breeding stock. So if I have one video posted about checking the Fomantia score on your lamb's eyelids, then I can just refer all my customers to that video instead of having to try and explain it over and over again. You know what I mean? So It just kind of became like an easy source for sharing information with people that are getting into, you know, sheep or goats and trying to learn how to do things or whatever. And it can be difficult. I'm very blessed in my area to have a great small room knit vet, but not a lot of places have those. So it can be kind of difficult to share information in this way. It just kind of gives people a view of what they should be looking for.
Yeah. It actually, two of the videos I watched of yours was ear tagging, which I've never seen before. So I thought that was really good information. And the other one was, what's in your lambing bag? I thought that was really great too, to know what you need to have on hand.
Yeah. And so it just works because I started to try to stay in touch with people. In fact, my entire baby doll flock went to a person that's now a very good friend of mine. But when she was starting out, she had no sheep. So she had bought these breeding age ewes and a ram with the intention of breeding them and kind of jumping in both feet. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you just don't think that people, you know, it's hard to remember 8 years ago before I knew all this. So it kind of just helps people, you know, share some information, and you get a lot of feedback even from people that watch the videos, and they'll say, oh, that's great, I add this in as well. And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. You know what I mean? So you learn even people watching.
Yeah, sharing that information back and forth, that's great. I've noticed on YouTube, especially with homesteading videos and livestock, you can build such a great community and share that information back and forth.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, what would you say is the biggest challenge you've come across or had to overcome when raising sheep?
I would definitely say the biggest challenge, learning from a complete newbie, never owned livestock in my life, was the attention to, I mean, you think they're livestock, but you really need to pay attention to each animal every day and learn their normal so that when one of them is off, you catch it right away because sheep especially can go from looking perfectly normal to dead the next day. So, you know, learning to watch them very closely every time you're doing chores, every time you're filling water, and just if something seems off, you need to check them, you know, check temperatures, check eyelids, and make sure that you are staying right on top of their health care, because it's heartbreaking when, you know, it's usually like your favorite one or your kid's favorite one that does something like that. And, you know, and establishing a great relationship with my vet and having the opportunity to learn from her, you know, what to look for and how to deal with it has been a godsend, because you know, parasites, especially, like I mentioned, are the biggest hardship when it comes to raising small ruminants. And there's a lot to learn when it comes to those, you know, not everything gives a black and white symptom. So just keeping an eye, making sure that you know what that animal's normal is. And if they seem off, don't wait till later to check, you know, and see if they have a fever or see if they're pale, you know, check right then and address it as soon as possible, because, you know, they can just go downhill so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what would you say would be the most rewarding thing with raising sheep?
Oh my goodness. That's a tough one because I feel like they have done so much for me, but I feel like raising sheep, it's like other people that raise sheep will call it sheep therapy. Like you can just go out in your flock and because they're so used to you, they're just very comfortable with you and they, you know, put their head on your shoulder and just spending that time with them and them trusting you, because they're not by nature a trusting animal, you know, they're a prey animal. So having them, you know, gaining their trust and building that relationship with the flock is a huge rewarding feeling for me personally. And then, you know, building the community around them, people that not necessarily live near me, but through the internet and YouTube and social media, you know, I've met because they raise sheep as well, you know, finding other people that have like-minded interests and stuff like that, just like you, you know what I mean? Like it's a great thing to build community and that's been a huge reward as well.
Yes. I love that. I can't wait. I'll go out into our pastures now, which right now we have like a big chicken tractor with some chicks we're going to be processing here soon. So that's in our field right now. But in the open pastures, I'll just sit there and just be like, oh, I can't wait until I have a flock out here to just stare right at and view it.
Right. Have you decided what you're getting yet? Or
I have my top five right now. I've been keeping a running list of my top five. And awesome. I've actually taken some off and added some on, and especially as I talk to people, it's like, ooh, I really need to like look into this breed.
Right.
So I've got my top five right now, but yeah, it's going to be a really hard choice. I think we'll probably end up eventually with more than one breed, but
right.
I don't think I can talk my husband into that right away. I think I'll have to just start with one.
Right. Well, that's so exciting.
Yes. Do you have any advice that you would give a new shepherd? Like any particular advice that you can think of?
So what I was just going to say to you comes to the top of my head was that when you're buying your sheep, if it's possible, go and spend some time. Like I can tell you that spinning wise, I love Romney fiber. It's my very favorite fiber to spin. So naturally I bought some Romneys thinking I would love that, right? The Romneys that I bought were so different from what I was used to raising that it made chores so stressful and unpleasant. We ended up selling the few Romneys that we bought before we even developed a flock. So I think that with, you know, when you're starting out and you're looking at those breeds of sheep that you like, you want to like the way they look, right? Because you're going to look out of the pasture at them every day, but you also want to like their personality, because working with them should be pleasant and enjoyable, something you look forward to and not something that's frustrating or dreadful. So spend some time with the flock, you know, that you're looking to purchase from, and make sure that they're animals that even if they don't act towards you the way you want them to, they act towards the shepherd, you know, the way you want yours to act towards you eventually. So, you know, if they flock together or if they come to you when, you know, like if you want sheep that are friendly, you know, do they go to the shepherd, the friendly ones, you know what I mean? So spend some time with that flock before you commit to actually purchasing some. It's really easy nowadays. I have sheep from all over the country. In my rams, particularly, we buy in from, you know, different breeders all over the country. And it's really easy to get excited and to buy stuff online and have them trucked in. But if you have the opportunity, go spend time with the flock, you know, see how the sheep act, make sure that that's what you want, you know, out of your flock, because, you know, I think different breeds and different flocks within that breed even have different personalities. And that's something that's important when you're working with them every day.
That's really good advice, because I've also heard each breed, sometimes their wools can be totally different, even though they're the same breed. So that's really good to know that even different flocks can act different ways too.
Right. Definitely.
That's really good advice. Well, before we go, would you like to share any of your social media on here or a contact email in case the listeners would like to follow you or get in contact with you?
Sure. So everything that we do on social media is generally Facebook and Instagram. And then we have the YouTube channel. All of that is under Sweet Pea Farm NY for New York. And the email for the farm is sweetpeafarmny@yahoo.com. That goes directly to me. We are pretty constant with posting, especially on Instagram, about, you know, what we're growing, whether it's, you know, baby sheep, baby goats, and we have a big garden. And so you can find all that stuff, as well as the fiber art side of it. You know, we do a lot of felting and spinning and stuff like that. So that's pretty much what you see when you're checking out our farm, is critters and crafts all the time. That's what the kids and I do.
My favorite things.
Right? Me too.
Well, thank you again, Michelle, for coming on the podcast to share today. I really enjoyed talking to you and learning about your farm and all your sheep.
Thanks so much, Casey. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
It was so nice talking to Michelle and learning about her farm and flock of Southdown and Oxford sheep. I really look forward to every week getting to connect and talk sheep with all of these amazing shepherds. Be sure to check out Michelle's YouTube channel for so many great and informative videos, and her Etsy shop is filled with the most adorable little felted animals. I'll make sure to link them both in the show notes. All right, that's it for this episode. Until next time, take care and keep creating with fiber.